From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of August 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, China and the U.S. disagree on the value of the yuan. The Obama administration is preparing to take over some state EPA regulatory duties. States aren't happy about the power grab. And a drought in Russia may impact next year's winter wheat crop. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Hey, on the subject of Russia's winter wheat crop, we'll hear Daryl Good's take on the shortfall. And then in the second half hour of our program, wheat will be featured again, roughly speaking. I spoke with Gary Schnitke this morning to record a FarmDoc website podcast on the U of I's 2011 crop budget projections. These are the numbers that should help farmers make decisions about which crops to plant for next year. Oh, and third time's a charm. We've said goodbye to Ed Kieser a couple of times already. It's official today. It's his last day, and he'll be here with one final weather forecast on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat at 7.02 1/2, down 10.5 cents today. December at 7.34 1/4, 9.5 lower in the March. At 7.50 3/4, down 5.5 cents. The hard red in Kansas City settled the nearby at 7.23 1/2, just 1.5 cents lower. From the corn pit, September contract in Chicago, 4.11 3/4, up 5.5 cents. December, the harvest month, at 4.27 1/4. Up 5.5, and the March at 4.40 1/2, up 5 3/4. May corn at 4.47 1/4, up 5 1/4, and next year's December contract settled at 4.43 1/4, up 5.5 cents. The August soybeans today at 10.52, down a nickel. September 10.43 1/2, up 17 1/2. November at 10.44, up 15 1/2 cents. Bean meal at 3.21.50, up 6.10. Oil at 41.80, up 71 cents. Mercantile exchange numbers, live cattle at 94.32 1/2, 12 1/2 higher, and lean hogs at 82.87 1/2, up 67 1/2 cents in Chicago at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and Board of Trade. More in a moment. Outside markets here, September contract, $75.41 a barrel, down 33 cents today. Ethanol at $1.76 8/10, 2 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.33 8/10, up 4 2/10. And the heating oil at $1.99 8/10, 0.3 cents lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,214.90, up a dime. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 10,322. That's just about 2 points higher. And the U.S. dollar at 82.92 is up 0.29 for the afternoon. The CREB index now stands at 268.79. It's down 0.12 on the afternoon. The Goldman Sachs at 512.41 is down 2.16. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service. They say this afternoon, sky should be sunny in the area. With a high near 95, the heat index will rise to about 104 degrees outside. It's actually 108 here on the plaza outside the Urbana-Champaign campus studios of Illinois Public Media. Southeast winds, at 7 miles an hour tonight. A 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, partly cloudy. A low around 71, southeast winds at 7 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, a 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy skies, a high near 94. The heat index value is rising above 100 again. Tomorrow night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A low around 73 with winds out of the west between 3 and 5 miles an hour. Sunday should be partly cloudy with a high near 89. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 66. Monday, mostly sunny with a high near 86. And Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 63 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in West Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd. How are you today?
Hot.
Yes. I know it.
It's really hot outside. I made the trip from South Campus in Mumford Hall to here in Campbell Hall. It's only about a mile. I rode the motorcycle from one end of the campus to the other, and I got hot just doing that. It's a scorcher out there today.
Have they ever gotten air conditioning in Mumford Hall yet?
Oh, in Mumford, yeah. It depends on where you are. My office is air-conditioned.
Oh, sure, sure. Rub it in.
Yeah, usually it's like a meat locker down there. Most people come in and they're freezing their tails off. We have a lot of computers that we try to keep pretty cool inside the studios for radio and television there.
Yeah.
It's cold and comfortable, I suppose. But when I come out, it feels hot, 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 I got to tell you. So tell me about this marketplace. Let's turn our attention to what happened in Chicago, because some interesting things. Wheat futures down again today, but there managed to be gains in both corn and soybeans. I suppose in the beans in particular, it was driven by the hot weather. Is there anything else happening?
I think the hot weather was the majority of it, but you know, it was interesting. The beans probably got at face value the most bearish report yesterday morning, and the trade didn't see it that way after the initial opening, Todd. And even after yesterday's close, last night the Dalian and the futures in China was up sharply. Malaysian palm oil futures were up, I think, at a 15-month high last night before we opened up as well. So it wasn't just the Chicago trade that didn't mind the 44-bushel bean yield. I think it was the world as a whole, in terms of the world buyers and sellers, did not really buy into the idea that we're going to get 44 bushels. I also think that a lot has been written about in the trade that the demand side is still under, by USDA, under what probably will actually be sold to countries like China. And it seems like this was the report that ignited kind of the demand side of the market, and all those great exports we had seen over the last 2 to 3 weeks, those Chinese sales, unknown sales, China, you know, day after day after day, all this demand news came across the screens, but it just wasn't traded and factored into the price. And I would say yesterday and the start of today allowed that to happen. I would also say, though, that if it had not been for a drier and hotter weather forecast, it looked like to me that the beans were going to probably join the wheat, and the corn was probably going to join the wheat in rolling over from a chart perspective.
Yeah, so I was going to make note that, on a cautionary note, I suppose, that when you looked at the numbers as they came out from USDA, the WASD figures show a high cash grain price of just $10, and, well, that ought to be about where we are, I suppose, at this point.
Yeah, I just don't think that the USDA numbers all the way down the line were really taken at face value. I mean, I was talking to several clients after the report and today, and, you know, they all have good points. There's a lot of sudden death out there in the central corn belt and bean belt. There is a lot of pod filling that's going on right now, and if the central corn belt and the western corn belt stay in the mid-90s to low 100s, a lot of those pods just simply aren't going to get filled. So 44 bushels on USDA's report yesterday was looked upon as probably the biggest number we could get without a weekend rain, and that puts us right smack dab in this weekend. This is really at a crossroads, this bean market, because we do have a lot of premium in the bean market right now. At 1040, 1045 November bean futures, I think it's safe to say that the trade is not expecting a 360 carryover. They're well underneath that, probably closer to 225 to 250 if my model's correct. And so this weekend's rainfall is going to be huge for the soybeans next week. It's going to be huge for the yield and the producer expectations. It's going to be huge for the trade and the likelihood of prices being able to break out to the upside. So the midday model maps came out. Iowa is flooding also. We don't know a lot about that yet, but Ames was underwater as of this morning, and so we don't know the damage in the farmland there, but that's something to keep an eye on. And then this sudden death issue, all these things are going to be traded next week with the rain being the leader, I think.
Yeah, the flooding we'll have to take up at a later time as we get a better handle on what's happening there. But the SDS, when you talk to producers, is that coming out of mostly Iowa?
No. In fact, it's odd because a week ago I was visiting a client and we talked about it, and I said, gosh, it seems like a lot of sudden death is starting to show up, and this was, you know, running across 28 over into Illinois. And I said, this is starting to show up. I've heard some clients as far over as Jacksonville, Illinois, you know, west of Springfield, talking about it, saying it's really starting to encroach on their bean yield potential. Now this week, it's really started to be taken note by clients. So one of my clients down by Vetersburg was up in a plane earlier today, and he said he really could see a lot of sudden death in the plane from say Crawfordsville over to the Illinois border, and it's starting to really take hold. And producers, instead of on the survey that they did 2 weeks ago ahead of this report for corn and beans, barely mentioned sudden death. But now they're coming around saying this could be a 10, 15, 20% yield grabber if it gets any worse than it already has. So it makes those rains that we really need right now all that much more important. So we need cooler, wetter weather, and I think if we get that, we'd be due for a pullback in beans. But we don't want to escape the idea that this is the time where the beans would take off if we miss some rains.
All right, so we may get the rain. We still have the SDS to deal with. Beans are higher, up 17.5 cents. The November contract at 10.44, up 15.5 for the day. And the corn pit December futures gained 5.5. They settled at 4.27.25. How much upside potential you think's left there?
I think they'll follow the beans, but they'll continue to be pulled by the wheat more than anything. And the wheat high, can you say it's in? No, but you can say that the week was very disappointing for the bulls, especially Thursday's close and today's close. I think mentally they're set back. And if that September wheat would break back below that 675 level, I think it'd be very hard for the corn to go any higher. Now, we do have the Pro Farmer Crop Tour coming up later this week. I think that'll mean a lot. We're going to have some seed companies combining this week, late this week, early next week. I think that'll mean a lot. And then we'll have to watch that basis. Some of my clients have been saying basis is starting to perk up here in spot corn for fall delivery. That's something to watch as well. If we get those three things working in favor, then maybe the cash market can hold us together. But with the harvest right around the corner and the wheat looking vulnerable, even with a bean rally, the corn may not have the explosive nature that the beans could have if we did miss some rain.
And make a couple of notes here. Talk about that global stocks number. It was cut, of course, because USDA managed to really look into the former Soviet system, into Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Russia, and really cut that crop 15%. And then maybe couple that with the hard red winter wheat sowings that have to happen in Russia for next year, and what the potential impact might be there if they don't get rainfall.
The Russian government said today that they would be looking at maybe as much as a third less acreage if they did not get a good system of rains by around that September 5th time period. This afternoon when I looked, it looked like Moscow was getting some rains, but it wasn't moving over into the Caucasus or the Urals or anything like that. But it does look like the major heat is over with for now. But they've got a finite window of about 2 to 3 weeks to start breaking the drought with rain. So that's the second part of your question. The first part of your question, I thought USDA did a good job on the report. They essentially took the former Soviet Union 12 countries back down to where they used to be, where they didn't export hardly anything and usually just used all their own stocks. And that's essentially what they did yesterday's report. It was funny because the ending stocks for Russia, Kazakhstan, and the Ukraine, they actually went up yesterday because the USDA cut back the exports so dramatically. So I liked how USDA did the numbers, and they gave Russia a big hard cut. And when you look at major exporters, we are down in terms of ending stocks. We're lower now than we were in 06 and 07, but the U.S. has 2 to 3 times more than we had in 06, 07. And then other countries that would rely upon their own supplies, not including China, which is completely out of the mix on the numbers I look at, we're running about 60 to 100% more supplies and ending stocks for those other countries. So I think USDA is right that we don't have a global wheat problem. We more have a regional problem. So, again, it goes back to we're probably at a point where we need to feed the bull and the wheat again.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, Todd, have a great weekend, and
hey. Stay
cool.
I'll try. You too. Thanks much. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what he had to say again, you can always do that. On our website, the address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. We post an update of either the opening or the closing market numbers and a bit of analysis there at about 10:15 and 3:15 daily. The number again, 217-333-3434.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In agricultural news, the United States and China are again on a collision course over the yuan. earlier this week, U.S. politicians complained about trade imbalances after China's trade surplus blew out to an 18-month high in July. Yesterday, China fixed the yuan at a 7-week low against the dollar, meaning the yuan has gained around 0.3% versus the dollar in nearly 2 months. The fix represented the biggest one-day move in dollar-yuan since the June 19th depegging. The Obama administration says that it is prepared to take over some regulatory duties traditionally left to state environmental officials. The announcement by the EPA, while largely administrative, is the latest signal that the Obama administration intends to crack down on emissions of heat-trapping gases across many industries rather than wait for Congress to do so. Some states have complained the agency's timetable does not give them enough time to revise their own state rules. Others have challenged the legal and scientific underpinnings of the EPA's efforts to fight climate change. Drought and heat across the European part of Russia and Ukraine are now expected to delay the sowing of winter grain crops, raising concerns that losses will extend to next year's harvests. The sowing of winter wheat traditionally starts in August. Russia's chief weather forecaster said yesterday that the weather would further delay sowing of winter crops until at least September. Russia's first deputy prime minister today says that the sowing area for winter grains will decline to 12 million hectares this year, down from 18.5 million hectares in previous years. OPEC today says that demand for oil will continue to grow slowly in 2011. In its monthly oil report, OPEC left unchanged its forecast of a 1.05 million barrel per day increase in 2011 in global oil demand to 86.56 million barrels per day. The group tweaked upwards its forecasts for global oil demand this year. Its current estimate of demand for 2010 is 85.5 million barrels per day, 1.05 million barrels per day higher than in 2009. Japan's Prime Minister and Bank of Japan Governor may meet as early as next week to discuss the yen's strength and possible responses. Japanese policymakers have been trying to talk the yen down this week as it surged to a 15-year high against the dollar. And the central bank checked rates, with banks as officials stepped up efforts to prevent the currency from harming a fragile economic recovery. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week. You can hear all those programs on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll post Commodity Week by about 6 o'clock this evening. It's our look back at what happened in the markets. Commodity Week on our website at willag.org by 6 o'clock this evening. The program is recorded at 4:30 on Friday afternoons. Now up next, you know the drought in Russia has fueled the price of grains around the globe higher. I spoke with University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good earlier in the week. He's been considering the global impact of the Black Sea area drought and what it might mean for other commodities. He has these thoughts.
From a general standpoint, we're starting the current marketing year, if you will, with fairly large world inventories of wheat, both inside the U.S. and outside. We're at a multiple year high on inventories. So the focus right now, of course, is on the concern about this year's crop with various weather factors around the world pointing to a much smaller world wheat crop than we've had the last 2 years, which were nearly record large. Canada, a lot less acreage planted because of spring conditions. And now the focus is on really the Black Sea area because of drought conditions that have persisted since spring there. Continually lowering production estimates for Russia, Kazakhstan, and to some extent the Ukraine. And then last week's announcement that Russia said they would suspend wheat exports at least until the end of the year. So that's the broad picture. What does it all mean? On a worldwide basis, we do feed a lot of wheat on an annual basis. Somewhere around 4 billion bushels of wheat a year get fed outside of the United States. Much of that is in Europe and Russia. So there is some concern that there will be less wheat available for feeding this year. Although with a big stock level, there should be adequate supplies. The bigger issue is the run-up in wheat prices. Will that just shift some demand away from high-priced wheat to what is now lower-priced corn in livestock rations around the world, and therefore boost the consumption of corn, and then in the scope of things, increase the price of corn? And that's a reason I think we've seen corn prices following wheat prices up, is maybe expecting some shift in demand from wheat to corn in livestock rations. That would also come at a time that we might see some stronger imports from China as well. That's yet to be determined, but a lot of talk about more corn demand in China to fuel their livestock industry. So it's really a developing situation, a dynamic situation. Nobody really knows yet the final outcome of this year's crops and if and when Russia will get back into the export business. So it's very fluid. Prices have rocketed sharply higher on wheat, and then late last week settled back down. Clearly, I think there was some overreaction, and also the recognition that if these kind of prices are maintained for a few more weeks, that the Northern Hemisphere is likely to respond with a lot more winter wheat acres in 2010 to be harvested in 2011, so that there would be the prospect that we could go from a bit of a shortage of wheat to a surplus of wheat in a very short period of time. So that resulted in different price behavior in old crop versus new crop wheat. And I think initially we did see the weakness come back into the new crop because of the recognition that we could expand production. So really kind of a unique situation, a fast developing situation, and the market reacted in a very, very strong way.
That was University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good assessing the impact of the drought in Russia on global stocks of grains and prices.
Time now to check in on the cash grain market. Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company is with us to take a look at what's been happening there. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about basis for corn and soybeans. How's it reacted all week long?
Corn basis has been relatively steady. We've lost a penny on the old crop and three on the new in the course of the week. Old crop beans have been sliding off. Processors seem to be backing out with cash movement this week, and the amount of time till we get the new crop rapidly diminishing. We've lost 15 cents in the course of the week since last Friday.
You think that cash grain basis for corn will continue to widen?
I think that we will see some pressure on getting the crop put away. My bias is we got to prove we can get it put away, and then afterwards the bin door slams shut and we have to try and buy it back out.
Bids for the day?
We are at 388 on nearby corn, 390 new crop. Beans, 1069 nearby, 1014 new crop.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast here on the Closing Market Report.
It's International Left-Handers Day, where southpaws celebrate the right to be left-handed. In 1867, a Secretary of Agriculture report listed various farm implements, including left-handed plows. The report said that left-handed plows were in common use and that some farmers insisted the left-handed version was superior because they could commence plowing in the middle of a field, turning all the furrows inward. On this day in agricultural history in 1872, Richard Willstatter was born. He won the 1915 Nobel Prize for Chemistry for his study of the structure of chlorophyll and other plant pigments. In 1902, Felix Wankel was born. A German engineer, He invented the first rotary internal combustion engine. Instead of moving pistons, the Wankel engine uses an orbiting rotor shaped as a curved equilateral triangle. The engine has fewer moving parts than its piston cousin, and it's also lighter and takes up less space. And in 1913, the first true stainless steel was cast in Sheffield, England. The steel alloy contained almost 13% chromium and 0.25% carbon. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, usually joins us on Fridays. He asked to be out of the office this afternoon. Fortunately for us, Ed Kieser still with us and capable of filling in. Thanks, Ed, for doing this on very short notice. I do appreciate that a lot.
Well, my pleasure. I haven't done this for a little while, so it's fun to get back in the saddle, so to speak.
Well, let's take you back into the saddle because we need to know a whole lot of what's been happening. It's been really wet in Iowa and parts of the western Corn Belt, and then it's been really hot right here. What do you see?
Well, right now we have thunderstorms across portions of southern Wisconsin into eastern and southern Iowa, and some of those will have downpours that could produce a quick inch or two of rain, and then a few cases even more than that. So there could be localized flooding. The rain has now pushed out of some of those areas in central and western Iowa that have been hammered so far this month. And rainfall in central Iowa around Ames and Des Moines and Fort Dodge has just been extraordinary, in some cases exceeding the rainfall of 1993. So we're talking about big-time flooding there, and I think that's going to become a major issue as we start to assess the crop size down the road, because there's going to be nothing but losses coming from that kind of weather. And they're going to start to get a little break here for a few days, but rain may redevelop in some of those areas next week. The wetter areas tend to stay wetter and the drier areas stay dry. And in portions of southern Illinois, it's just downright dry right now as well as hot. So we're seeing all of the extremes in terms of moisture across the Midwest. And in general, that's not helpful for the crops. Good news for all of us that have to live through the weather that we've been having. After tomorrow, it does look like the humidity goes way down for a few days, and the temperatures will drop a bit, although still getting up into the 80s every day. So it's not going to get cold. It's just going to not be as hot, and that will be good. But I think the crops could actually benefit from even cooler weather than what we're expecting.
There is a chance of rainfall, at least from the National Weather Service, over the next couple of days. Do you agree with that? You see that?
Yes. In fact, a severe thunderstorm watch has been posted for portions of Illinois, northern and west central Illinois, as well as neighboring portions of northeast Missouri and east central and southeastern Iowa until 9 p.m. this evening. So storms will be working in that area. I think it's The frontal systems, and there's a couple fronts coming in from the northwest, get farther south and east, the rainfall will be more scattered. So some areas may only pick up a tenth to a quarter of an inch, while other places pick up an inch. So everybody should get some rain, but I'm sure some will not get enough rain.
Just about a minute left. Tell me about Russia and what you see there.
Well, as we've been hearing in some of the news reports, it's very dry in southern Russia and Kazakhstan and neighboring Ukraine. And there may be a few showers here and there over the coming week, but certainly not enough. So now the concern goes to the next season, because the winter wheat being harvested now, that's done. But in a couple months, planting, and it doesn't look like yet there's any sign of moisture recharge there. Things aren't quite as bad farther north for the spring wheat.
Thank you so much, Ed.
My pleasure. Great working with you, Todd.
And good to work with you, too. Ed Kieser, last time on the air, chief meteorologist here at WILL on his last day as a University of Illinois employee. We do appreciate all the work you've done, Ed, for the agricultural community in Illinois, Indiana, and the Midwest. Stay with us if you can. The Farming World is up next here from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media News and Interviews. This morning I talked with Gary Schnitke, put together a podcast for the Farm Doc website. You'll hear it in its entirety as it would air on the Farm Doc website. By the way, I do that on a fairly often basis for the Agricultural Economist upstairs in Mumford Hall. We have a little discussion about whatever the latest article they might have written would be this afternoon. We're going to talk about crop budgets and projections. You'll hear that in a moment. If you'd like to hear all of those podcasts, just visit their website. The address is www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. In a moment, we'll talk with Gary Schnitke.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Farm Doc Podcast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Another FEFO has been released. That stands for Facts and Opinions from the Farm Doc folks. On hand with us is Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist. The latest FEFO, Gary, is called 2011 Crop Budget Implications for Crop Rotations and Returns. It's pretty straightforward when you read it, but the title tells us that you're going to talk, I suppose, about what the returns might look like for next year, and depending on which crop you plant. Is that right?
That's correct. And what we're doing right now is releasing our 2011 budgets for the coming year, and they have a lot of interest now because of some of the wheat decisions people are looking at, and also just corn and soybeans for the upcoming year.
You break it down by area of the state. Let's start in southern Illinois and start with wheat. What is it that farmers will be considering?
Well, we've seen obviously pretty high or increasing wheat prices here recently, so we put together budgets for corn, soybeans, wheat, and wheat double crop soybeans for southern Illinois. And what we what those budgets suggest, and just to give you a feel, we were using expected prices of $5 for wheat, $3.75 for corn, and $9.50 for soybeans. And again, that would be for 2011, not this fall, but 2011. We still come out that wheat by itself is not as profitable as corn or soybeans. But when you combine wheat, double crop soybeans, returns exceed corn and soybeans in southern Illinois.
And then if you look back historically, what do you find the numbers look like on double crop soybeans in the state, especially in the southern part of the state?
In southern Illinois, we looked at how corn compared to wheat double crop soybeans over the last several years. And actually, wheat double crop soybeans on average was about $6 less than corn returns, but that varied from year to year to year quite a lot. Our current projection for 2011 is that wheat double crop soybeans would be $28 higher than corn, which is above average.
And for the numbers in the southern part of the state, corn versus soybeans, on just a single crop as opposed to a double crop, what do they look like?
In southern Illinois, we're projecting corn returns, and this would be to both the farmer and the land, to be $174 for corn and $140 for soybeans. So corn's more projected to be more profitable than soybeans, and that's pretty typical. Usually when we're budgeting, we see that, and that, in fact, is what the actual numbers suggest as well.
What do you use as the dividing line in the state for southern Illinois? Where do you start?
Southern Illinois is basically 70 and south.
Okay.
So our regions are basically northern, which would be I-80 and above, central, I-80 to I-70, and then I-70 south is southern Illinois.
So from I-70 south in the state of Illinois, you're suggesting that at least at this point, using the numbers you gave us, the best rotation on land that you can put into wheat this
fall, which would be after soybeans, would be a wheat double crop soybean, and that would give you the most return at this point. And then if you're followed by corn only, which would come after soybeans, and then, of course, you don't have really a choice to put soybeans back in. I suppose you could, but not many people do. And if you're looking at corn versus soybeans, then it's just the corn is going to give you the best potential for profit next year.
That's correct. And again, the unusual thing about this year would be that wheat double crop soybeans is above corn, and part of, you know, we're looking at high wheat prices, but also what's driving that is pretty good soybean prices as well, because the double crop soybeans contribute pretty heavily to that wheat double crop soybean return.
How much of a discount did you put on the soybean yield for the double crop beans? Do you know?
We have double crop soybean yields in these budgets at 35 bushels an acre, and the average with just regular soybeans to be 47 bushels.
That's going to move up the state. Talk about the central part of Illinois and what your budgets look like and what the implications might be for the crop rotation.
Yeah, for the central part of the state, and we're looking at corn, projecting corn to be $64 more profitable than soybeans. From 2000 to 2009, corn on average was $30 more profitable than soybeans. So we're looking at corn being about more. We're projecting corn to be more profitable than average than soybeans, but not as much as this what happened in 2007 and 2008.
And overall, are these numbers better than, for instance, your budgets that came out for this year?
They're more optimistic than we would have been projecting for a couple months ago, with higher prices coming along here recently. But overall, 2010 would be projected lower than 2011 returns, but not by a lot. We didn't project much change in non-line costs between this year and next year, and prices are about the same, and it really does depend on what's happening on yields right now.
And let's move up the rest of the way in the state. So if you're above I-80, tell me about the budgets and the implications there.
In northern Illinois, we're projecting corn to be more, $84 more profitable than soybeans, a bit more than in the central part of the state, and on average that corn has exceeded soybean returns profitability by about $36 from 2000 to 2009. Again, projecting corn to be more profitable than soybeans at this point in time.
And finally, when farmers and others go visit the FarmDoc website and read this particular FEFO, which is titled, again, 2011 Crop Budgets, Implications for Crop Rotations and Returns, they can find it in the FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu. Down at the bottom, you take up cash rents. What do you explain there?
Just comparing cash, or what we're projecting for returns for 2011, and looking at what farmers have historically received from farmland returns. And if you look at those two things, it's suggesting that cash rents stay pretty stable from where they're at currently. The 2011 budgets aren't suggesting large increases in cash rents because of very high profitability. If anything, 2011, when we're budgeting, are less profitable than the years 2007, 2008, and a bit better than 2009, and probably roughly comparable to what we're looking at in 2010, given reasonably good yields.
Can we switch topics just a bit at this point?
Sure.
Farmers have often asked, especially those who have signed up actually for the ACRE program, what the projected return on that ACRE program might be for last year. That, of course, will be delivered later this fall. You've been tracking that, I'm sure. What do the numbers look like for each of the crops in the state of Illinois?
Right now, ACRE payments, state ACRE payments, we're projecting somewhere between $18 and $19 average acre payment on corn. That's come down here recently because of higher prices during the later part of the marketing year. Soybeans, no payment, and wheat will be a large payment, and we're projecting that in the $70 plus planted acre range for Illinois for the 2009 crop that will be received here in October.
And then so the wheat's done. Corn and soybeans still have to be calculated a bit. And I know producers, you tell them not to take these into consideration very much as they make their decisions. But in the 2011 growing season, those who are signed up per acre would probably like to have an idea what your projections, if there are any, for an acre payment for that crop. Do you have any at this point? Have they been made?
For the 2011 crop?
Yes.
At the prices we were at and at the yield levels, there wouldn't be acre payments right now. If you look at our budgets in 2011, there wouldn't be acre payments for the 2011 crop.
For any of the three crops, for wheat as well?
Yeah, that's for the 2011 crop. There's likely to be payments for the 2010 year, but not the 2011 year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not for yeah. So, I'm off by a year. So 2011 would be the crop that they've got to put in the ground next year for the crop that they'll harvest this fall is really what I was thinking about. And okay. Payments would come in fall of 2011. Are you projecting payments for the crop that will be harvested this fall and next July for wheat? I suppose.
Yeah, we would still be projecting payments for wheat. We would be projecting modest payments for corn, given what's happened to prices here recently. Acre payments looked more likely in May of this year for the 2010 crop than they do now, given where the price levels are at right now.
All right. Thank you so much, Gary.
All right.
Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois, part of the FarmDoc web team. You can visit the address at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu on the World Wide Web. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been a FarmDoc podcast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to listen to any of our agricultural programming again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget that you can hear Commodity Week after 6 o'clock this evening. We record that program at 4:30 on Friday afternoons. Commodity Week, it's our look back at what happened in the world of agricultural marketing on Fridays, and you usually hear it on radio stations over the weekends, but you can hear it before any radio station airs it at willag.org.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. In business news, the Labor Department today says that higher energy costs helped lift U.S. consumer prices in July, the first rise in 4 months. The Labor Department said its seasonally adjusted consumer price index rose 0.3% last month after falling 0.1% in June. In the 12 months to July, the consumer price index rose 1.2%. Meanwhile, the Commerce Department today says that U.S. retail sales rose in July, but the gains were concentrated in auto and gasoline station sales. Sales climbed 0.4% last month, following a revised 0.3% drop in June. Excluding vehicles, sales advanced just 0.2% compared with a median forecast of 0.3%. Gasoline station sales jumped 2.3%. When autos and gasoline were stripped out, sales actually fell 0.1%. The Eurozone economy grew at the fastest pace in 4 years in the second quarter, driven by a surge in Germany. The combined gross domestic product of the 16 countries that use the euro grew 1% compared with the first 3 months of the year. Germany's economy grew 2.2% between April and June, the fastest quarterly rate since reunification in 1990. And JCPenney today says that it earned $14 million, or 6 cents per share, in the 3 months ending July 31st. That compares with a loss of $1 million, or break-even per share, in the same quarter last year. And that's a look at today's business news. Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, corn and soybean futures are not the only commodities Illinois producers keep an eye on. Yes, there's wheat and hogs and even cattle. But Lisa Brotz tells us about at least one other important commodity in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
In some houses, the phrase breakfast of champions means a bowl of cereal. In my house, or more accurately, in my office after I've staggered into work, since I can't get it together most mornings to eat before I leave for the day, breakfast of champions often means chocolate. I know, it's so not good for me, but nothing beats the taste of good chocolate with a decent cup of coffee. And truth be told, if I'm eating commodities for breakfast, chocolate's the commodity I'm choosing. Yes, commodities. We hear about them all the time here in the Midwest, since we're a major home to two of the largest, most basic agricultural commodities grown on the planet, corn and soybeans. But really, the term applies to many other agricultural products, including grains like wheat and oats, which are also produced here, and food items that aren't, like sugar, coffee, rice, cacao. That's chocolate to you and me.
Yeah, cocoa is a soft commodity that's traded on mercantile exchanges. I believe it's the smallest exchange. Typically, cocoa is purchased by the shipping container in units of about 20 tons. And cocoa bean sources are kind of blended together so that you're no longer buying, say, Ivory Coast cacao beans, but just general cocoa beans.
Daniel Schreiber of Flatlander Chocolate, whose production facility, or chocolate factory, is located in East Urbana, is what I would call a micro-producer. He produces food in very small batches for others to eat, and the food he happens to produce is chocolate. But don't call him a chocolatier, which is basically another word for candy maker, for someone who makes things out of chocolate. He doesn't make truffles or turtles or the kind of chocolates you get in a box. He makes the chocolate, the dark, mysterious, fantastic-smelling chocolate that these kinds of chocolates could be made from, and he sells his bars to outlets in Urbana-Champaign and a few other locations in central Illinois. Daniel makes chocolate by taking the process from the bean, the cacao bean, which closely resembles an almond, all the way to the bars he makes and sells, start to finish. This artisanal process, called, well, bean-to-bar, is what makes Flatlander chocolate unique. Flatlander is certainly the only small artisanal bean-to-bar chocolate maker in Illinois and is one of about 10 to 20 in the United States.
Cacao beans are grown on trees between 20 degrees north and south of the equator, primarily in Central and South America and in West Africa. The different countries that we get our beans from vary from Peru, Panama, Madagascar, Ivory Coast. And right now we're ordering the beans through a distributor, but we're working to establish what we call direct trade connections with farmer cooperatives, primarily in Central America.
Here's how artisanal chocolate making works. Daniel starts the process by first cleaning the beans, then roasting them in a convection oven, which gives him some control over the eventual flavor of the chocolate. After roasting, the beans' husks are cracked to get at the cacao inside, the little bits called nibs. Using a home brewer's mill, a shout out to his hobbyist days. Then they're put into a winnower to separate the husks from the nibs. Then the nibs and sugar go into the grinder where the whole mix is ground or refined for 18 to 72 hours. The resulting liquid chocolate is heated and stirred, or conched, which is another method to control the flavor of the chocolate. In this case, it's acidity. Anyway, after all this, the chocolate still has to be tempered or alternately heated and cooled for specific periods of time. If extra stuff called inclusions is being added to the chocolate, like salt or caramel or orange peel or dried currants from a local farm, they go in after the chocolate has been poured into molds. Then the chocolate is shaken on a vibrating table to get the air bubbles out of the molds and to settle the inclusions. Later, after cooling, the bars are packaged by hand. I totally adore the packaging of these bars. Instead of foil, the bars are wrapped in unbleached wax paper and then again in colored paper with graphics provided by Daniel's friends for each different kind of bar. You can see the chocolate through the wax paper peeking out at the ends of the bar. It hasn't even been a year since Daniel started out making chocolate at home as a hobby. At first, it was kind of like how people get into the home brewing of beer or the making of wine or the roasting of coffee, things like that. He used equipment cobbled together DIY style to make chocolate for his friends and their friends. He was kind of a chocolate fairy godfather, going around Urbana-Champaign, bestowing his concoctions on the land. Soon enough, though, Daniel decided to press the pause button on his old gig, graduate school in computer science, and do chocolate full-time. Thanks to some fundraising and some benefactors, he's now in business in a former restaurant space in East Urbana. It's a changing neighborhood, and Daniel's hoping that his vision for the space, which goes well beyond making chocolate and into the realm of including community food and garden projects, will get people from the neighborhood and neighboring neighborhoods interested in what he's doing and maybe even directly involved in growing and preparing and eating all kinds of foods, not just chocolate.
I hope that this production facility, with the resources that it provides, especially easily certifiable kitchen space, can serve as a valuable resource for the community. And I hope that it becomes a locus for production of food, for people to pursue their hobbies related to food, to produce food for the farmers market or other venues, and just a valuable community space.
I would expect nothing less from a breakfast of champions.
Dan Schreiber unexpectedly died shortly after the original airing of this installment of In My Backyard. A fund in his honor has been established to carry out his dream of a community kitchen mentioned in the story. For more details, go to flatlanderfund.org on the World Wide Web. That's flatlanderfund.org.